When you need to focus on building, do you want to get bogged down by your database? MongoDB is an intuitive, flexible document database that lets you get to building. MongoDB's document model is a natural way to represent data so you can focus on what matters. MongoDB Atlas is the best way to use MongoDB. It's a global cloud database service that gives you all of the developer productivity of MongoDB, plus the added simplicity of a fully managed database service. You can get started free with MongoDB Atlas at mongodb.com/atlas.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Susana Benavides. She's the director at Stir Labs, a Stanford Community Impact and City Innovation Fellow. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Scott. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Thanks for hanging out with me today. So it's interesting because I look at your LinkedIn and you've got Stanford Computer Science, focus on AI. You're doing all this cool stuff. It's always fun to look at people's LinkedIn and try to figure out the path that they mapped out for themselves. It looks like you planned it all out and you did all these cool internships. This was all a master plan, wasn't it?
Oh, totally. It was totally a master plan. It just took me like 14 years after the fact.
So did this just happen or did you work this out or how did you end up at Stanford doing a computer science degree?
Yeah. So the quick story is that, you know, when I graduated high school, I went off to Loyola Marymount. So it's very, very far away in my younghood eyes. I grew up in Boyle Heights, which is like in East LA. And, you know, the West Side is like a world away. And so to me, it was like, this is going to be a big adventure. I'm going to go off and like, you know, study poli sci, become a lawyer, a judge, and then I'm going to be a politician. And then maybe like 3 months in, maybe a little less, about 2.5, my mom got, she's always had like health problems, but her health worsened and she needed a surgery, and which meant that she couldn't work for an extended amount of time. And, you know, both of my parents were formerly undocumented, and so they didn't get any health benefits. So I made the decision to take a break. I thought, you know, I'll come back in a year and I'll continue my studies. But that didn't happen. And so then fast forward, many, many things happened in that path. And I can cover that a little more later. But just sort of what got me to Stanford is that eventually I found myself in the Bay Area working at this law firm. And I had the opportunity to work with all of the startup clients as well as like mature tech clients. And I realized that every single pitch deck that I saw was like, you know, the founding team is all male and it's like, you know, white male from Stanford, white male from MIT. It's like, just over and over and over again. I think maybe I saw like one Asian male co-founder from one of those schools. And I sort of thought, okay, at this point, I knew that I wanted to really like be able to make my own ideas come alive. And I had already built up the sort of business development and like the business side, I guess you could say. But now it's like, okay, well, I don't know how to build things yet. So let me go learn that. And I can't be, you know, white and I can't be male, but I can definitely go and get that computer science degree from one of these institutions. And hence, it took me a while, a lot of community colleges and trial and error, but eventually I got into Stanford and I decided to study computer science.
And you succeeded, but then things happened and the commencement didn't happen. What happened there?
Yeah, you know, I don't like complaining about things because, you know, there's always something worse, right? But this was like particularly difficult because it's taken me so long to get here, right? I think a lot of people can relate to that you sort of feel like you know, for so long, you're like, I want this thing, I want this thing. And for me, it was that I wanted to go back and get my degree. And it really was like any degree. I just wanted to show that I could. And it's like, when I, you know, just so many roadblocks, and then to finally be like, this is the moment. And then COVID happens, and you know, the commencement was canceled. And it just felt like, I was robbed of that moment of celebration for myself, definitely. But even more, like, that's what I was looking forward to, was having my daughter see me walk across that stage. And more importantly, seeing my parents, you know, see their daughter accomplish this great thing. So that was really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the first member of my family to graduate from college, and it took me 11 years to get my 4-year degree. But I can only imagine what that would be like to see, you know, your first generation kids go across the stage of a school like Stanford and get celebrated would be amazing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I got a sweater for each of my parents as they, like, you know, Stanford dad or Stanford mom. And they wear it all the time, especially when they FaceTime people. They, like, make sure the sweater shows up.
It's like the casual, it's like the bumper sticker, my kid went to Stanford.
Yeah, you know, and you know, when they say it, though, it's like, oh, you know, Susie went to a Stanford. It's Stanford. Which I love. But yeah, it's, you know, to me, talking about, like, we all talk about all of our failures internally, right? Like, it, for a long time, my inside voice just said, like, oh, I can't believe you didn't go back and get that degree. I can't believe that you got married at 18 and that you, you know, got divorced and were a single mom by 23 of, like, two toddlers. And I can't believe you, like, didn't do this and that, and so many things, right, that we beat ourselves up for. And I just feel like it's so rare that we have these moments of celebration of, like, hey, I did this big thing. So it's something I'm still sort of processing. It doesn't feel real, honestly. It just feels like, oh yeah, that thing happened and now we've moved on.
Do you think that they should come back next year and have, like, a double graduation or include everyone from this year and next year's event? That'd be cool.
It would be cool. I think so. I think they will. I think they'll do right by it. You know, obviously this is out of their hands, and I kind of feel even more sad for the students that are there now, in colleges everywhere, and kind of missing out on that experience by having to do it from a computer at home, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just as amazing as the technology is, whether it be Teams or Zoom, it just is not the same. I'm watching my son, who is in his first year of high school, and he's upstairs right now on Zoom and trying to pretend like this is high school, and it just isn't, and that sucks.
It does.
Well, the thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and the topic that I know that you're passionate about, you touched on a little bit there, is why can't we normalize failure? Why can't we celebrate failures? And not failures where, you know, I messed up and I'm celebrating that, but more some stuff happened and it didn't go the way I expected, and that's okay.
Yeah. So this is something I'm very, very passionate about. I think that in general, most of us are terrified of failing. I think that it's not like you share, hey, I failed at this thing, and your friends are like, oh, cool, what did you learn? Right? There's this, like, embarrassment around it that I want to get rid of. To me, you can't move forward if you're paralyzed by the thought of failure. Mm-hmm. And I talk to a lot of, like, high school kids or, like, current, like, community college students around communities that are similar to mine. And it's something that I emphasize a lot, because I think we're at a point where we expect such a high level of excellence and accomplishment that we never stop to think, okay, but, like, what did that path look like? And is someone's accomplishment really a story of what they're able to do? Or is it maybe that we should look at the failures that they faced along the way And maybe that tells us a richer story. And so, for example, I like to say that, you know, I went to, oh my goodness, I have a blog post about this on my blog. I can't remember how many community colleges I went to and that I failed out of. And each, you know, like each instance, there was a very good reason, right? Like when I was pregnant and I couldn't continue. Another one is just, I was a single mom with two little girls and I couldn't afford childcare while I continued to go to classes. So that I like to say that the contextualizing of the failure is really important, because instead of me just the thought kind of banging around in my head being like, oh, you like really, you failed out of like community college A, B, and C. But instead, it's like, no, you know, there were these very big life events that happened. And it just happened that that wasn't when things were going to go down the path I thought. Mm-hmm. And you fast forward, though, right? And then I was able to finally go back to school at night and prepare myself to go back to a four-year college. But it was because I had all of the resources I lacked back then. And I think that if I had instead just looked at failing those community colleges and thought, oh, wow, it's because I'm stupid or this isn't for me, then that's not normalizing failure. That's not even inspecting it, right? It's like, I'm just so embarrassed by the thought that I failed that I'd rather not talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather not like try to move past it just so that like people don't even know. And like, how sad is that?
Mm. Well, then you're pretending that it never happened, but you're still pushing it down inside yourself and your body knows that it happened.
That's exactly right. And I mean, how many of us do that, right? Just like pushing down, like you're like pressing down all the recycled paper in the bin and you just want to like fit more stuff. Like, so what I like to say is that instead of running away from the fear of failing or running away from the fear of like admitting that you failed, that isn't it better to maybe kind of lean into it? And it's this whole thing I say, it's like my mantra is, it's like the art of like getting uncomfortable with the uncomfortable, right? So it's like you want to lean into discomfort and you want to say, I'm doing this in honor of like my tomorrow and what I know can and will come. So right now it's going to hurt and it's going to be really uncomfortable, but that's growth, right? Like if we're not uncomfortable, then we're not growing and we're not moving forward.
One of the things you talk about in your blog is the importance of documenting your growth, which I think is one of those things we tell people, and I've tried to tell this to my children, and you can just tell on their face, they're like, okay, whatever, Dad, yeah, I'll start journaling now. That'll be really super helpful. But it's meaningful, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and it's definitely meaningful how you just described it, like even for our own children. But I'll give you like an example of how it's really helped me. You know, working in corporate as a Latina, when I didn't have a college degree, meant that I had to like continuously prove my intelligence to folks. And that's, you can imagine, is really demoralizing. Mm-hmm. And someone also said to me, someone's like perspective of you is what matters. So if you don't like go out of your way to shape that perspective in honor of the things you're trying to accomplish, then you're just going to have to essentially accept the consequences of how they see you or don't see you. So really like documenting your growth to me was a necessity of, and know that I'm a very capable person. I know that I love and thrive with like solving really difficult problems, but if someone's perspective of me is just like, oh, okay, so she only has a high school degree and, you know, she's completely outside of our network because like, you know, I didn't grow up right in certain environments. But if instead I can then show at each point, like tie it back to what I've been able to build and accomplish, I have like this arsenal of examples of like all of my successes, abilities, and very like also just like concrete examples of what I can build and what I've built and what I can do again, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned also that it's hard to succeed when one doesn't have an example. And being able to point in someone and say, look, they did it. They had the same come up as I did. They started the same way that I did is super important. But if you don't have that, then you're really blazing your own trail.
Yeah. You know, and I think many of us blaze our own trail. I mean, you mentioned being the first in your family to go to college. Like, there's so many pain points that come out from that, right? It's like just understanding the finances and what classes to take and just figuring it all out. And it's part of why I believe in like sharing very vulnerable stories on my blog. I hope that others can see that, like, hey, here's this person who's very similar to me and she's doing it. Mm-hmm. And not only is she doing it, like, oh, look at me, like, you know, I accomplished all these great things, but I want to highlight like all of the in-betweens, all of the struggles, so that it's like normalized, so that when someone gets like when they face a similar scenario, they're like, ah, yes, I remember Susanna mentioned that she went through this and this is how she approached it. You know, so sort of like we should all be the examples that others lack.
Mm-hmm. Hey, folks, I'm taking this episode to advertise for other podcasts. If you enjoy stories about the people behind the technology that we use, you should check out the Greater Than Code podcast. They focus on the human side of software development with stories of diversity and inclusion, accessibility from people that you don't normally hear from. Search for Greater Than Code in your favorite podcast app or check out greaterthancode.com. It sounds like from the position, if someone has a position of power, like I am starting to have at my job, a thing that I can do is not just normalize failure, but give someone an opportunity to fail in a way that doesn't destroy their career. They can fail safely. They fail with a net.
Yes. I love that you say that. At work right now, I like launched a new program and it's sort of like we finally passed that phase of like, you know, raising awareness and launching and doing the roadmap and all that good stuff. And now I have someone that works with me, a colleague, and I just had this conversation with her where it's like, hey, you know what? Now that we're entering phase two, this is an opportunity for you to grow like leadership skills, to level up and to co-lead this project. And I'm still going to be here. I'll be your safety net. But I want you to really be able to say, hey, at the end of the year, like I did X, Y, Z, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's important. Like we can't expect folks to already come in the door, like fully baked with all the capabilities we expect. Someone has to have trained them somewhere, right?
I struggle like with that with my kids. My 14-year-old, like I mentioned, is in high school now. And, you know, I think he's doing like geometry class, say, and he's got 94%. And I'm like, that's amazing. 94%. Good job. And in his mind, he's like, that's 4% from a B. If I get a B, I'll never go to school. I'll never get to high school. And I'll be digging ditches. And I'm like, well, but if you enjoy digging ditches, that's okay. And he's like, that's not what I'm talking about. You know, the anxiety to succeed is already starting. And I'm trying to explain to him, you can fail if you tried hard, and trying to differentiate the difference between failure to launch versus failure and you put in good effort.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yes, it's like I know so many people in my culture and community and neighborhood that they never even tried because they were so afraid of failing. And like you said, though, it's they did fail. They failed to launch. And I like to think, you know, I'm 36 now, and if, what is it now, 13 years ago, I had stayed in the abusive marriage I was in, I would be in that same, like, basement unit, miserable, and and depressed at the thought that now I'd have two teenage girls who I provided a very unhealthy example of what a home life is like, you know, and like the years would have passed anyway, right? And instead, like in these 13 years, I've gone through many, many failures. I mean, you know, my own parents and my own family saw my divorce as a probably one of the biggest failures. But I'm also very proud of myself, right? Like it's been a very bumpy road, but now I'm proud because I have a 14 and a 15-year-old that see their mom as someone who refuses to stay in unhealthy situations. And that's mm-hmm. super valuable, right?
Mm-hmm. One thing I appreciated about your blog as well is that you didn't just go and talk about personal branding. You talked about cultivating your brand at work, which sometimes people refer to as code switching, but as we do code switch from our cultures, like who you are with your mom or, you know, your kids versus at work. But the way you expressed it was cultivating your brand. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I understand that some folks are like, oh, you should code switch or not code switch. You know, I emphasized on that post that sometimes you want to code switch for your own protection. And what I mean by that is that, again, it goes into how you're perceived, right? I think that if you're someone who fits into the stereotype of a certain position of power, so like, you know, if you're an old white guy, people just tend to take your word. But if you're a brown Latina woman who, when she gets excited, her accent comes out, then you have to work a little harder to maintain that sense of like just like a ownership, gravitas, and leadership. And so to me, the way I see it is what matters at the end of the day is what you want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And if you have certain goals, then I like to see it as like in the morning, even when I work from home, I wear jackets and slacks or dresses for work. I see it as like my confidence armor that whatever happens in this day, whatever I accomplish or don't accomplish, good or bad, this is all in relation to my job. It's not about me personally. And it actually makes me way more comfortable to have certain conversations, particularly around money and selling. As a Latina, again, it's very rude to talk about money, right? Like we just are like, oh no, like that's so crass. But when it's someone else's money and I'm wearing my jacket, I'm like, oh yes, like I will be very like, you know, blunt and transparent. And
right.
So I see it as almost like your superhero cape. Right. And as you continue to develop your brand, it should really be like, this is how I want to be seen because I know that this is what I'm capable of. And it's not just saying those things, but then it's, okay, well, what are the actions that you need to take in order to like make that happen?
Mm-hmm. If someone's listening to this podcast and they might disagree with you strongly, I think the thing that myself and the listener can all agree with is the intentionality and the deliberateness of what you're doing. You're not saying, I'm hearing you say to the audience, well, make sure you wear your Century 21 real estate jacket. That way you're perceived as professional. What you're saying is you intentionally have these actions that set you up for success because they feed your spirit. They make you stronger that morning. People tease me at work because I only wear leather shoes and I work from home. So I literally have my dress up shoes. That's my suit. I wear my button-down shirt and my dress-up shoes, and I go downstairs. And people are like, dude, why aren't you wearing jammies? And I'm like, it's just not. And again, I can make a declaration like, jammies aren't professional. You could disagree with that, but the real statement is jammies aren't professional for me.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly right, you know, and thank you for highlighting that. I mean, yeah, I imagine many people disagree, and I encourage them to disagree and dig into what that means to them and to do like what works for them. What works for me is this, is like, I call it my chingona uniform, you know, like I feel like a badass when I put on my jacket and I put on my red lipstick and my makeup and I'm ready to like conquer the world. And again, like that works for me. And, you know, I'll also highlight, like there was a few years ago, my little brother was going through a really difficult time. Again, we grew up in East LA and he unfortunately got caught up in gangs and a lot of our like extended family was also caught up in gangs. And that was, you know, really hard for me. He was going to prison for the first time. And I was again in the Bay Area. I was far away. I wasn't there to like, felt like I wasn't there to help and do more. And like that affected me a lot. And I was at work and someone asked me about it and I shared, it was kind of like, you know, when you've just like stuffed your feelings down so tight that they just like blah everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. And I did that thinking this person genuinely cared. And, you know, the response to me was, wow, I never realized you were such an emotional person. You know, you might want to just like separate your work life from your personal life.
In a moment of vulnerability, that's probably not what I would have led with.
Right.
That's too bad that they did that.
It is too bad. But my lesson there was not that, oh, I'll never be vulnerable again. No, I think you can see on my blog post that I actually am. I'm extremely vulnerable with what I share. But what I learned is more that by, again, having this division, it gives me a better sense of who is this kind of like friend and deeper connection that I may or may not want to share with. Or what are the aspects that I do feel comfortable that not that I feel comfortable, but what are the aspects that I refuse to like not show at work, right? And so for me, that's... I love calling myself a hustler because I firmly believe that like my street skills that I learned as a kid contribute to why I'm able to be here after like so many failures. And I say that, you know, and I like to normalize those words or like chingona. Like I'm going to bring my culture and myself to work, but it's going to be very intentional.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can normalize this and you can make, I see a new blog post in the future, something like chingona vulnerables como tu abuela or something.
My abuela was a chingona.
Interesting. Yeah, don't mess with her. She's going to kick you in the nalgas. La chancla.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's great that you had those people to look up to, though, to give you that strength, but you still cultivated your own self, your own personal brand, and now you're giving your kids that perspective. So now they are seeing the normalization of a direction and of intentional choices.
Yeah, you know, I believe in getting inspired from wherever you can. I love going to conferences and seeing other people speak, and I also love celebrating their journey. So, you know, when I meet someone and they say, I'm going to do this, I'm like, I believe you and I can't wait to see it. Because I do want to highlight that it makes me sad how we don't celebrate folks until they've quote unquote made it. And only then are we like, wow, their path was so inspiring. But when those people needed it the most, we don't encourage them. We instead invalidate them. We're like, oh, sure. Well, do you know how hard that is? You know? And so I do want to like say that something I hope everyone can do is that you just encourage folks. You don't know what's inside their heart and what they're capable of. If I would have listened to all of the naysayers, I would have never applied to Stanford. I would have never left that marriage. I would have never so many times.
I think that was a really great thing that you just said, because people always say, their path was inspirational once they've reached that ending. You're saying we should say your path is inspirational, regardless of where you are on the path.
Exactly.
That's really fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Susana Benavides, for spending time with me today.
No, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Muchísimas gracias por su tiempo. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.